Hello and welcome to Inside Fingal, the podcast that gives you an insight into the work being done by the councillors and staff of Fingal County Council to make Fingal a better place to live, work, visit and do business in. My name is Gerry McDermott, I'm the Head of Communications here at Fingal County Council, and I hope you'll stay with me as we continue to inform you about the work of your local authority. This is episode 26 of the Inside Fingal podcast, and our guest today leads a team that is trying to change the way that residents in Fingal move about the county. Sinead Murphy is the senior engineer with the Active Travel team and is responsible for delivering kilometres of safe cycling and walking infrastructure that will make it easier for citizens in the county to move about their area without needing to use their car. It's work that's going to impact all of us at some stage, so I'm looking forward to getting a real insight from Sinead on what it is all about. Sinead, you're very welcome to Inside Fingal, to Fáilte Mór Road, Gaoji an Clár.
Garamila maha gats Gerry, ta an áhas arim vehan sean yu, is rud íntach gwil me an an gaelga lairat lat, agus is rud íntach grau desha gom le jenny, chastis a gaelga garamula vwinta mák an sea corla chundai in a gaal. Honig fiaus mór my chud gaelga, agus bwyn meni ansolt as, agus ta sé I mynt nagum, an gaelga úsad nís mó I my chud aibra. Ní ac wán nor fi'n dúlgas ag an gaelga úsad, ac wám ga keile agus meg jenif my chud aibra.
Sinead is one of a growing number of people within Fingal County Council who are able to speak as Gaeilge, as you just heard. So during the course of today's conversation, you're going to find me asking the odd question in Irish and getting the answer from Sinead in Irish. But don't worry if you can't follow it. I'll also ask the question in English. So Sinead, let's start looking at active travel. And it's a buzzword phrase, but what does it really mean?
Cad is brí leis an tuirme sin taisteal gníomhach, Gerry, má tá tú ag taisteal gan cár beidir nó de chois nó ruthair agus sa gnáthéil agus tú ag déanamh de chuid gnó pearsanta beidir rithin le tá tú ag dul go dtí an scoil nó ag dul ag obair nó ag dul ar sport nó rud mar sin. Braithíonn daoine sa bhfáilte agus tá siad ag fhad níos fearr leis an cóthéil.
So in English, that is?
So it's an expression that we use, Gerry, active travel. It's basically when you're moving on your own steam. You're using your feet, you're using a bike, maybe you're in a wheelchair. And it's generally in your day-to-day personal business. So, for example, you're going to school, you're going to work. You're using your own steam to bring yourself and transport yourself around the place rather than bringing a car with you all the time.
And would it be fair to say that active travel benefits people who can easily choose walking and cycling?
Yeah, active travel benefits everyone. You don't have to be walking or cycling to see the benefits of there being fewer cars on the road or making lots of trips in your town. Obviously, there's health benefits when you are moving on your own steam because you're burning up your own energy. And without realizing it, you're actually getting your daily exercise into your daily business. Obviously, there's the added benefit from a climate action perspective that you're not producing carbon emissions. And also, there's a lot of social benefits, a lot of data out there on the better interface of people in society when they're out of their cars and they're mingling and talking to each other. And indeed, the same would apply to a lot of the data coming from economic information in towns also on the economic benefits of active travel.
And there's also benefits in relation to climate change, as you mentioned. Why are councils so focused on it?
Okay, Gerry, the transport is the sector with the second highest carbon emissions in Ireland. Motor vehicles create carbon, obviously, and all of the statistics and the data out there would suggest there's a significant number of people on the road at the moment that are doing very short journeys, a lot of them doing less than 5 kilometres. While we accept that many people are doing longer journeys, many people out there need to use their cars for various different reasons. Maybe they don't walk too well or they're delivering products and services. There is a lot of data on that less than 5 kilometre journeys, and the government are very much focused on those people that can and are able, switching them from their car onto their feet or onto a bike or wheeling, for example. And in fact, maybe using a combination of sustainable modes, so perhaps taking the bus and doing the first 15 minutes on foot or the last 15 minutes on a bike share scheme or something like that. And our job in active travel is to make these modes of transport more convenient, more safe, and essentially to bring it to the top of people's choice list when they're actually leaving their houses in the morning and they're figuring out how to transport themselves.
And how did you end up in working in active travel?
The unit was set up in 2020 on foot of the programme for government, and also with an increased demand coming from the COVID crisis, where there was a lot of people out walking and cycling and there was more demand for that space from people to do that. It seemed like quite a challenge to me, but one I was very excited to take up to come to the active travel team. And I'm feel very passionate about the whole climate action piece and improving the environment and reducing carbon emissions. So I felt it was an opportunity for me to use the previous experience that I had had across the council functions and also in the private sector to bring to bear on implementing our active travel strategy in Fingal.
And those previous experiences, how useful have they been?
Very, very useful, because I suppose in my time in local government, I have worked across many of the different functions, including planning and strategic infrastructure, transportation, water services and so on. But I've also significant experience in the private sector. And the one thing that's in common with all of those experiences in the past is the importance of public engagement and public consultation and bringing people in for the engagement at the earliest possible stage in the scheme. So, I bring in all that to bear on the active travel rollout.
Kinfo will to hen on a tugha don tashtil gnivok.
Jerry thought on sima gomme gnivu or son or heroja. Shilam gwil on swinifshin tashtil gnivok on himpli och is thuthlone a curvime. Mar kamid on arrogant usad con infrastructure nua curer fall. August bakordu an ahru int inchina. A yenavim mask nanini. Be kiart gmeak on rawa tashtal ganivak is far, on rawa is far than nanini, on rawa is eiska agus on rawa is sovald than nanini.
Okay, if you didn't understand that, the question I asked Sinead was, are you passionate about active travel? Or why are you so passionate about active travel?
Yeah, I suppose I have a keen interest in the climate action, and I am. What I said was that the term active travel is a simple one, but its implementation is much more challenging. We have to build the infrastructure. That's one part of it. But the other part of it, and a very important part of it, is we have to implement or bring about or encourage behavioural change amongst the people, ultimately so that they're... active travel will be their first choice, the choice that they feel is the easiest to make and the choice that they feel is the safest for them to make.
Your team have visited places like the Netherlands, Denmark and the UK to see their cycling and walking infrastructure in action. Why is that helpful?
Yeah, Jerry, that has been very helpful. It's a huge task to redesign the way that we think and the support that we need to get on active travel. I think the one thing I would feel, having been on a few of those trips, is it was successful in debunking a number of myths that we have. For example, they have a cycling culture. They've always had a cycling culture. They never had any opposition. They have more favourable weather, and all of our cyclists here in Ireland are middle-aged men in Lycra. They, in the Netherlands, for example, it was really reassuring to hear about the opposition they had when they started to roll out some of these schemes in the earlier stages. In fact, we had a beautiful photograph of a wonderful plaza in Utrecht, which in the early 1980s was essentially a car park. And now you look at the same picture of that location now. It's a thriving, sociable, economic hub in the centre of the town. No cars and loads of active travel movement throughout. So it was very interesting, especially for our elected representatives, to hear the bravery a lot of people had to show in the Netherlands to make that change. And all of us came back inspired, and we're trying to harness that energy now. The one thing I would say is the success of those trips also was having a mixture of Fingal officials, not just from active travel, but from every single department and also elected representatives. So that inspiration is being harnessed, as I say, at the moment in the implementation of active travel.
And I think it was very important that the elected representatives were on the trips and that, because I think they got a lot out of it too.
They got a huge amount out of it too, and we had some really good, great speakers, current elected representatives, council officials, ex-mayors of cities and so on, and they showed us how things can be done. But as I say, they showed us the huge challenges they faced and how they got around them. So I think our elected representatives have been enormously supportive since we came back, and we're very grateful for that.
And you mentioned there about the Dutch having a cycling culture, but we had a cycling culture as well at one stage. Like, I remember, and I'm old enough to remember, as going to primary school and seeing people coming out of the local factories on their bikes heading home for their dinner.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, part of this is we talk about children and bringing them to active travel. A lot of them are on their bikes. It's a matter of keeping them on their bikes rather than changing them. But for the adults, it's probably more of a behaviour change also. And I suppose as the motor car has become much more common in Ireland, say, since the 60s and 70s, the road, it has taken up, I suppose it has been given the priority of the road, which essentially is public space that we all own, but the priority has been pretty much given over to the motor car. So a lot of what we're doing in active travel is rethinking who owns that public space and how we should distribute it.
Yeah, you mentioned the weather there in the Netherlands, and you do hear that a lot, that people say the weather is much better in Holland and Denmark and places like this than it is in Ireland, and they have the infrastructure there. How do you respond to those sort of comments?
Well, it is interesting because, look, I'm an engineer, so I love data, and we did go to try and figure out that when we went and we looked at the Met from the various different countries. And did you know that they actually get more rain in Amsterdam than we do in Dublin? Now, we do have more rain days in Dublin than Amsterdam, but they actually get more rain, and it is renowned for people cycling. Interestingly, when we were on one of our study trips in Copenhagen, there was an unseasonable snowfall. And when we were going out to do a full day's cycling, we thought there would be nobody out there. But the city was mobbed, and not with cars, but with cyclists on their bike commuting into the city through the snow and the sleet. And it was very interesting to see. They were all dressed appropriately for the rain. I would have to say a lot of them just go in their business suits to and from work, and their fashion gear going out at night time. But maybe that some of them had, you know, capes and raincoats and various different things. So the city didn't stop. They continued. They didn't transfer into their cars because it was snowing. They just kept going.
So it really is the clothing that you wear and how you protect yourself, and it's not just about wearing lycra. You can wear the business suit, and if you've got the right clothes on you can do it.
Absolutely, and it's very interesting to see that in those countries, because you see all sorts, young, old, teenagers, business people, fashion people, and a few people in lycra, but really not many. So it's much more of an opportunity for everybody to move around the city rather than a sport.
Yeah, and I think that is it, isn't it? It's not a sport. What you're trying to do is to get ordinary people using cycling as a means of transport.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's just a functional part of their daily lives. But the most important thing is that it's easier for them to get on their bike and cycle into town. The cities have made it easier for them, and they've made it their number one choice. So that's why they do it.
You talked about school kids and that. Are the next generation, who are the kids in school today, are they going to be better at using active travel than we are today?
Yeah, I think they will. The children are natural early adapters of any change. They're good at it. But as I said earlier, a lot of them are cycling at their very earliest ages, and it's just a matter of keeping them cycling and ensuring that they can cycle independently. The one thing about the children that certainly you come across in this role and teenagers is they're very passionate about climate action. I think we can all see that from the representations they make to government and elsewhere. And they're also very passionate about equity and fairness. And it's really interesting to try and harness that passion in themselves and in their communities, because we are doing, sometimes you hear children saying, particularly teenagers, we're not doing enough in climate action, or we're doing nothing, sometimes you hear. It's really important for the children in this county, in Fingal, to know What we're doing, but to make the link between what we're doing and climate action, because sometimes they don't understand that link. So we've been working really hard to kind of harness that passion and harness that energy that they have in their families, in them, their communities, you know, in themselves. And one of the things that is coming out loud and clear, and they love this, is, as I mentioned earlier, the prioritisation of the motor car over the last number of years. And through that change and the increase in popularity of the motor car, children have lost quite a lot. They've certainly lost their safety. They've diminished the clean air that they used to have, and they have diminished their childhood independence. We all know of what, you know, where we were cycling as kids and where they are. Now, there's many reasons for that, but the prioritisation of the motor car is a very, very big one there. So they've, in essence, we're trying to teach them that they too have a right to the road. They too own this public space, and no child drives. Very few teenagers drive. A lot of older people don't drive. Many other people in between don't drive. And we need to just rethink the use of that space in terms of it being equitably distributed amongst all of those people. Just on the children again, Safer Routes to School programme is a programme we're rolling out. It's funded by the National Transport Authority, and Antashka are administering it, and we're rolling it out on the ground. And we implemented changes at the front of four schools this year in 23, and five in 23, and four more next year. And that's things like improving cycle tracks and access to the school, improving crossing points, improving bike lockup locations, and so on. So just making it a safer, easier, more convenient way for children to get to school.
Yeah, and you've also been, I suppose, pioneering in terms of closing off the areas in front of schools as well, so that there's better air quality and it's safer for the kids to actually make their journey to the school gates.
Yeah, that's true. We have a couple of good examples, one particular one in Malahide on that, but limiting cars in front of schools would generally be part of government policy and generally part of a Safer Routes to School programme. That congestion in front of schools means it's an extremely dangerous place for children. And the one thing I sometimes have put to me is, why are you making that change? There's not been an accident yet. Well, we're not waiting for an accident. And it is government policy. Clear up the congestion. And we've done some significant air quality monitoring in front of that school in Malahide, and there's very significant improvements there in terms of nitrogen oxide and so on. It's also a much more sociable place to be when the children come and go and they're picked up from school, not just for the children, but for all of the carers, the parents, guardians, grandparents and so on. So there's a sociable element to it also.
Nílan Tarrigid, Gachtina Con Rohara Canuck, Codfrey Nadine Shin.
Ein team lat gulche kostasok ruher a chianak ak tashe wadnis kostasok kar a chianak an dov shud nak feder ruher a chianak is feder usa de bwintas shkemen ta agun an chasa chunde. Look, we have, Jerry, as I say, it's more expensive to run a car than to run a bike, but nevertheless, if people are struggling to get themselves a bike, there are a number of other methods of getting on a bike. We do have bike share schemes on a pay as you go basis, and our staff, for example, have opportunities to buy into the government bike to work scheme. Also, we're really strongly encouraging our staff to use electric bikes, or maybe to consider buying an electric bike. And to that end, we have purchased a number of bikes, and we have them out on loan. People can take them for a month, for example, and they can then decide if they want to buy one. But we also have a number of other schemes working for broader in the county. We have the bike share scheme, the regular bike share, and we have then the e-bike share. Very significant numbers there, 32,000 bike trips taken in the last year between those two bike share schemes, and we're hoping to build on that. We're currently in pilot contracts there, so we're figuring out what's working, what's not working, what do we need to tweak, and we're hoping that we'll build this into a much more significant scheme. In fact, we're aiming for 100,000 bike trips there.
Those pilots, how are they going? Are you seeing positive results?
Yeah, we have seen positive results. As I say, that's a very significant number of trips. I think it may break down to 20,000 and 12,000 between the two different bike share and e-bike share schemes. So, and as I say, we're building to 100,000. But there have been occasional issues that have come to light. And because it's a pilot, we can tweak it. For example, we had a number of people contacting us and engaging with us because people were abandoning the bikes in various different locations, not bringing them back where they were supposed to, which is a Sheffield stand. And we were able to work with the service provider there and increase a fine for abandonment of the bike. And as soon as that fine was increased, there was a behaviour change. So, and also we have now got geofenced parking, which basically means it's to all purposes, it just looks like a normal parking bay, but it's actually geofenced electronically. You can't see it. So you can park your bike within that. We've done that in line with the demand for where people wanted to leave the bikes. And it was quick and easy because didn't need any new infrastructure, didn't need bicycle stands and so on. So we're in contact with these service providers on an ongoing basis, and we're able to tweak those contracts fairly quickly.
How does that I can't remember the phrase. Geofencing. How does that work? Because it sounds very interesting.
Yeah, well, that's for the e-bikes. So it's basically once you get inside that parking bay, it has an electronic fence around it that you can't obviously see. And inside that, then you can lock the bike and leave it. And the app that you're using picks up that you have left it in the correct location and off you go. In fact, I was recently in London and was doing something similar. And the parking bay was overloaded. And it was interesting because the app wouldn't allow me to leave the bike in that location. But it was because it was overloaded. It already picked up there's too many bikes here. So it made me go to a different location. But they're very intelligent.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's probably the way things are going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I suppose, too, you know, you talk about bleeper bikes and tier bikes and those rent-to-bikes schemes. But if people want to buy a bike, they can also, a lot of employers offer the government's worked bike-to-work scheme.
Yes, exactly. So that's available to everybody. But I mentioned earlier on about staff because I think it's really important if we're out there trying to change the behaviour of the citizens of this county that we're leading by example. So we are very lucky in Fingal to have a walking cycling officer, two of them, and we are working in loads of different areas in that regard, but one of them is actually to change the behaviour of our staff. We would love to see this place, everybody noting that County Hall and Fingal, wow, have you seen the amount of bikes cycling in there in the mornings? Have you seen the amount of bike stands that are full? You know, we want to see that. So that's the change we want out there. So we're just trying to lead by example. But yes, the bike, the government bike to work scheme, in fact, I bought my own bike that way, is available to anybody.
Yeah. We hear a lot about active travel and greenways. What's the difference between an active travel scheme and a greenway scheme?
Okay, yeah. This is the one thing about active travel is while it's a buzzword and I am in the active travel unit, we're all in Fingal to a certain extent implementing or responsible for the rollout of active travel. And that might be the planners who are handling planning applications and ensuring that active travel is embedded in what developers are producing in the future. Us engineers in active travel, also those building the assets, those that are going to be maintaining the assets in the future and so on. So active travel is across the departments, not just active travel. But the one thing, our planning and strategic infrastructure are rolling out some very significant strategic projects. They're long linear projects, for example, Fingal Coastway or the Broadmeadow Way. And they have not just countywide importance, but they have national strategic importance in terms of linking up with the bigger strategic greenways across the country. In terms of what we do specifically in our unit, it's probably more focused on the reallocation of existing road space. So looking at the road space and thinking, well, for example, there is no bike lane there, the footpath is substandard, and do we need that many parking spaces or so on? And reassessing who we have there, who we want to have there, and what means we want them travelling in, and encouraging that behaviour. So, yeah, there is a bit of a difference between the two. And greenways, while there many people use them to go to and from work, they probably have... sometimes around the country they've been associated with tourism and so on, although I would have to say those that are being built in Fingal would function for both.
We look forward to them coming down the track very shortly. When you go to do an active travel scheme, do you need planning permission to do what you do?
Well, I suppose any planner would tell you that everything needs to be assessed on its own merits, each project, and we work very closely with our planning colleagues in that regard. Given the what I mentioned earlier on about the reallocation of existing road space, that is predominantly done under a Section 38 of the Roads Act, which allows us to reallocate that road space without planning permission. But it really depends, because some schemes maybe veer beyond pure reallocation of road space, and each project needs to be assessed on its own merit.
Let's talk about public consultation for a moment. How do you take on feedback from the public? Are they really listened to?
Yeah, look, public consultation is a huge element of this, and we believe in meaningful public consultation. And that means engaging with, for example, members of the public, maybe dropping leaflets in homes, having meetings direct, one-to-one with traders or with schools or with clubs. And of course, with our elected representatives, who we keep briefed on everything that we're doing, and they have a strong reach into the community. We need to listen to all the stakeholders and all the projects. And I think the really important thing about the pulling together all the commentary that has been made is ensuring that people understand if their comment has been taken on board, why, and if not, why not also. Because I think sometimes it's about managing expectations. Just because your particular comment wasn't taken on board, that doesn't mean that you haven't been listened to. Also, maybe a comment that is impossible to implement from an engineering or a safety perspective, it needs to be clear why we've taken things on board and not. And we do that at the end of the consultation and wrap it up with some sort of a report or a finish up document, which basically says we loved your ideas A, B and C, and we've changed the design or tweaked the design, and this is how we've done it. Or your comments X, Y and Z, we looked at them in great detail, but they weren't feasible because of the following reasons, or they weren't safe, or they were contrary to government policy or whatever. But it's just really important that people understand that yes, you were listened to, and this is what we've done with those comments.
Most people wouldn't describe themselves as a as a cyclist. So are there any small active travel swaps that the average person can take in their day-to-day routine?
Yeah, I think there's lots of small things people can do. You could, instead of taking the car to your nearest shops, you could walk, because maybe it might be quicker than driving and then spending 10 minutes looking for parking, depending on where you are. Dust down your bike if you have one in the shed, and maybe service it, get the wheels pumped and so on, and give it a try again, because as you say earlier on, lots of us cycled in our youths, and maybe there's people who haven't taken the bikes out for a long time. Or maybe try out Bleeper or Tier bikes in Fingal. Download the app and see, do you like that? And maybe that might even give you a flavour for having an e-bike. You might consider going out and purchasing one yourself. And then, there's the linkage of all the different sustainable transport modes. So, for example, you decide you're going to take the bus into town, and you do the first 15 or minutes to get to the bus on foot or on a bike or on a bike share, and maybe at the tail end of the journey as well. So linking it all up. And one thing I would say, and sometimes it is a little bit more difficult to do this, but set a good example for the children in your life. I know certainly for me, it has sometimes been more difficult to cycle to the school with kids, but I have done it so that they see me doing it, and they have never seen me taking my car to the gates of the school. So sometimes not everybody's able to do that, but I think if you're able, even if you're able to do it a few days a week, it's a really good example to be showing the children in your life. So there's a few examples of maybe how you could make changes.
Now, Fingal has different types of communities, and one of the communities we have is the rural community. Like over 50% of Fingal is actually a rural area. How can active travel impact people who live in the countryside?
Yeah, this is an interesting one as well. We do have an interesting county in that we have urban, suburban and rural in Fingal. And car dependency tends to be a lot higher for obvious reasons in the rural areas. So in the rural villages, I suppose we're looking at, safety in front of schools and safety generally in the towns across our various departments. But maybe looking at, are there people in that town that could make the change, or in the village that could make the change? Are there people on the periphery of the town that could make changes with little intervention from ourselves? Or indeed, maybe it might be like a park and stride that you're bringing the car so far and then facilitating something like that so that you still will not be bringing the car to the front of the school gates and so on, creating the congestion that we're trying to avoid. And also, I know there's been great improvements recently in local link bus services, so we're also looking at those services and ensuring that anything we do is cognizant of the routes they're taking now and what's available to people in those areas.
Sinead, time is catching up on us and we've just got to come to an end of our conversation. I'm sure we could go on for another hour talking about active travel. It's certainly very, very interesting and you know, what you're trying to achieve will certainly be good for both the health of the people and also the health of our environment. But can I ask you to look into your crystal ball and tell me what Fingal will look like in 10 years' time from an active travel perspective?
Yeah, I think in 10 years' time, I would see that the public space would be more equitably allocated across all transport users, the pedestrian being the number one and the second one being those on bikes, and then down into public transport and private cars and so on. I think with that will come huge public realm improvements. And by that, I mean like maybe the finishes in the areas, like nice town squares and so on, park benches, things that will enhance public and social engagement, as well as enhancing the active travel piece and indeed the economic development of the towns. The infrastructure will be better, particularly for those on foot and those on wheels, whatever sort of wheels they are. I should say not motor wheels. I'm talking there of cycling, scooting, and maybe those on wheelchairs and so on. And Greater Dublin Area, the National Transport Authority have a cycle network plan, which is really quite ambitious, and we're working our way through that. I'd love to think in 10 years' time that'll have been realised. The whole area we spoke about, mobility and e-mobility, like the bikes and the e-bikes and e-scooters and car share schemes, I think that's going to be, it'll be a completely different look in 10 years' time. And we're just trying to imagine where that one is going. And as I suppose the communities we're trying to retrofit and those new communities that will have been built in the interim, I would hope that active travel will be easily accessible to everybody. And as I said before, that the choice when you leave your house in the morning, that active travel will be the most convenient and the safest thing on your radar as you go out the door in the mornings.
Sounds great. Sinead Murphy, Senior Engineer with the Active Travel Unit here at Fingal County Council. Gurmila Magat.
Thanks, Jerry. Gurmila Magat.
So, Sinead, that's it for episode 26 of Inside Fingal. Gawain Buica Sarish le Sinead Murphy on our Aonad Taistil Gníomhach. My thanks again to Sinead Murphy from our Active Travel Unit for being our guest, and good luck to her and the rest of her team with their efforts. If you have any comments or suggestions in relation to the Inside Fingal podcast, please email podcast@fingal.ie. Remember, you can follow Fingal County Council on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube and LinkedIn, and also at fingal.ie. Thank you for listening. Until the next time, slán agus bí cúramach. Goodbye and stay safe.